Hello, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin, and this is Maltin on Movies with Baron Vaughn.
And I'm with Baron Vaughn. I'm actually putting that in the front of my name, W. Baron Vaughn.
I like that on your business card. It'll look very distinctive.
Yeah. People will be like, with who? Me. That's who.
There was a famous screenwriter back in the olden days of Hollywood. And at MGM, they were notorious for having one writer after another fix the script.
Quote, unquote, fix the script.
Yes, okay. Yes. They just keep handing it on to someone else. And this writer, who was very well known at one time, was at a party and someone said, oh, I always thought your name was And George Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that story. I love that story. So I'm with Baron Vaughn. People are going to start saying that to me.
With Baron Vaughn. Why not? We are joined today by my daughter, Jessie.
I'm also with Baron Vaughn.
Yeah.
Today. There are two. Now, see, I just want to know why you're not yet Baron Vaughn Maltin, because really, that's a pretty fantastic name.
Oh, I can't believe you just gave our listeners permission to have that in their brains.
I'm
Baron
just
Vaughn Maltin, I can't believe I didn't think of it.
I'm just saying, like, really, why not yet? Why has that not happened yet?
Well, it just did.
It just
right?
did. It looks
I'm
that way.
Saying.
It was waiting for this moment.
Once the genie's out of the bottle.
This nexus of.
Once the Maltin's out of the bottle.
Yeah, this nexus of father, of daughter, and with Baron Vaughn. Baron Vaughn Maltin happens.
So here's the deal, folks. This episode is timed for Father's Day, which is imminent as we're taping this. You may be hearing it after the fact, but the inspiration is Father's Day. And it was the inspiration of my daughter. So why don't you explain what you had in mind?
Well, so what had happened was we were talking about doing an episode. I said, well, Father's Day is coming, so it would be really interesting, I think, to talk to my dad about why he chose what he chose to show me, or as I like to say, what did he look for when he wanted to mold a new Maltin for the world? You know,
Maltin,
a new mold. I'm not even gonna. And then for Baron and I, sort of what we want to show our kids slash friends. Not that our friends will be our kids, but they might.
It's possible.
They could be.
It's definitely possible.
They could be. Me and LM over here, BFF. but yeah, just sort of.
Well, but you know, before. Those movies are very important. You know, we all have movies that we hold dear to our hearts. Mm-hmm. And before the podcast, you said something about how certain movies, if people haven't seen it or they don't like a movie, it's just kind of like, I don't know that we can be friends.
This might be done.
You
our friendship
hate that
might
movie?
Be over.
And you, our listeners, take movies that seriously.
That's
don't
right.
pretend like you yeah. don't.
I also find that there are, at least in my experience, there are certain movies that if you see – at an impressionable age,
yes,
yeah.
stay with you for life.
Amadeus.
And oh, God, right?
If you see a film like that at the right moment in your young life, that's it. It's permanently – it's imprinted.
Yes.
It's permanently imprinted.
Etched.
And somehow if you come to it later on, you may like it. You may appreciate it. You may even like it a lot. But it's not going to have the exact same resonance
Star
in
Wars.
Your life.
That's the number one movie. I saw Star Wars when you should have seen Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And people I know who have gotten to their 30s and haven't seen it, I'm like, well, it's too late. There's no way you're going to look at that and be like, I think my life has to change now. Mm-hmm. You're in
yeah.
your 30s.
I'm constantly trying to explain that to friends because of my dad doing what he does, reviewing motion pictures. When I was growing up, I didn't see a lot of blockbusters because – I didn't, unless I went with him. Usually the movies we would go to together tended not to be the blockbusters. So I didn't see growing up, I didn't see Jurassic Park. There are a lot of movies, yes, I know. And believe me, I get
– And she was too young for a lot of those at the time.
Yeah.
At the time they were new.
Yeah.
So what would happen is I'd get screening invitations for Saturday morning family screenings – for press and media.
And that's what we go to.
Upcoming family-friendly films.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mostly G-rated stuff. A lot of animated cartoons, a lot of fantasy films.
Which is sort of like what you grew up with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a new generation's worth. And live-action films like The Mighty Ducks. A lot of things like that.
Mighty Ducks is still so good.
You know, not as good as D3.
I don't care if there are three of them. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's okay.
So we saw a lot of films like that. There was a little period of time when that was our shared experience, seeing those movies. And then there were the things that other parents perhaps weren't showing their kids that I showed you.
shouldn't have. Not that I'm scarred for life or anything, because that would be awkward. But, you know, when again, when your father is a film critic, you sometimes see movies that you really probably shouldn't see with your family ever in your entire life.
Oh, that's a different subject entirely.
Bad Santa. Okay.
That's
for my personal life. I was like, oh, this is not a movie I should have sat down to watch with my mother.
I'm
going to go into the different room move to New York now.
Oh, well, see, we've created something really special where we just don't speak about what we've seen.
Now we have to separate this now. This is not childhood now. This is
adulthood.
When I was 13, we saw Talk to Her together.
This is adolescence now.
Yeah.
Habla con ella?
Here's all I'm saying, right? Gigantic boobs and such. Man, if you haven't seen the movie, if you haven't seen Pedro Almodovar movies, just don't watch them with your kids. That's all I'm saying. Save yourself.
Unless you're
Jesse
Almodovar.
And I have now
seen absolutely everything.
Long history.
Everything.
Of seeing the world's most inappropriate movies.
name something horrific
for father
we've seen
and
it together.
Daughter to see side by side, yep. Sitting side by side.
We might have to do a whole podcast
this
about those
movies.
This
is not intentional. Mm-mm. It was never intentional. Mm-mm. It just sort of happened.
All the time.
And, yeah. And
we're definitely going to have to do a full
and
podcast
all we could
on
do,
this.
All we could do was stare straight ahead.
Yeah, there's no eye contact.
No acknowledgement. No acknowledgement of awkwardness.
I would like to throw in for a moment. So when we saw Forgetting Sarah Marshall, my mom, my dad, and I, and when Jason Segel walks onto the screen, naked, my mom leans over
man
to me.
Man naked right uh-huh. there.
He's all man naked. My mom leans over to me and she goes, look, Jesse, he's Jewish.
Wow.
And I cried. So yeah, so that's that.
That's
but,
fantastic.
But we're not going to get into the beautiful, reasons I talked to a therapist
beautiful
right
awkwardness.
Now. It's that the Maltin family is all about beautiful awkwardness.
All right.
That's who we are.
That's the name of your book.
Right?
Beautiful awkwardness.
All right, but you take the lead position here. Go.
Okay, yes. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed that because I enjoyed the poop out of it.
Oh, hey, guys. So I will begin with you, father of mine.
Okay.
How did you choose the things you chose to show me? To mold me into this nerd that I am today, to make me your own protege, to put me into the world where I would have so few friends because I am such a weirdo.
Well, all right, here's an emblematic story. My wife and I love musicals, always have. My wife's favorite film, favorite musical, and just about favorite movie in the world is Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, the great MGM musical directed by Stanley Donen and choreographed by Michael Kidd with the fantastic cast and the most exuberant dance numbers ever put on film. And we were waiting for the right moment to try to spring this on our very young daughter. When Jessie was about three years old, Laserdiscs came along. Very few people remember Laserdiscs. No one really took them up. They were what DVDs were to become, but nobody really got behind Laserdiscs as a medium. But they became kind of a connoisseur's medium, and I was being sent review copies, and I got a copy of Seven Brides. Now, the advantage, see, the big deal was when you had VHS cassettes, you had to fast forward to get to the scene you wanted. But with a Laserdisc, just like a DVD, you could instantly go to the scene you wanted.
Had tracks.
So, okay, let's show her the barn raising sequence. Click onto the barn raising sequence. Jessie watches, dubious at first. She watches and her eyes widen.
Apparently I was dubious at 3 years old. Yes. Go on.
Her eyes widen. And when this incredible number is over, she says, again. So we click back. And we watch it again. And then she says, again. I don't remember how many times in a row we watched that scene.
437.
Something like that. And which was no great chore at first for us because we love the number and we love the movie. When, however, we tried to get her to watch the movie from the beginning, not interested, boring, no. She was little. She didn't want to get into the story or understand the characters. But one day, maybe 3 weeks into this process of endless repetition of that great musical
number. You did it to yourself.
At the end of the number, we didn't turn it off. We let it continue to play. And then she started to, you know, understand some of the character relationships, heard the dialogue, got interested in who these people were, and eventually got interested in seeing the whole movie. It took a little time, but she did. And I am very proud of the fact that to this day, it remains one of her very favorite
movies. It is my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. It's not one of. It's it. It is my favorite movie.
Now, and to be clear, Jessie is not a nostalgia person. She doesn't live in the past. She's a contemporary young woman, you know, with her own taste and her own ideas. But she also—
Am I? Because I think I'm mostly Maltin most of the time.
Well, all I know is— She fell in love with that film. Well, when even we had started to get a little tired of seeing it so many times, I said, all right, what else can I show her now? I thought, oh, I know, Calamity Jane with Doris Day. It's all about a tomboy, and she'll like that, and Doris Day is fun. And the leading man in the film is Howard Keel, who's the leading man in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. So she'll recognize him. And that'll be our link.
6 degrees of Howard Keel.
Right. Our link from one film to the next. Brought home Calamity Jane. She loved it. So we watched Calamity Jane a lot. And then I said, all right, what next? What next? Okay, another Doris Day film, The Pajama Game. Brought home The Pajama Game.
Steam Heat.
Another hit. Another smash. And that's how it went, bit by bit. To the point where we really did get into a wide swath of great movie musicals. Eventually, Singin' in the Rain. Eventually, the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A great satisfaction to my wife and me.
Only problem being that all of my first crushes were either 80 or dead. slight problem on that front. But other than that.
But Ginger Rogers signed a lovely photo to you.
She did.
I interviewed her the last time I got to speak to her. And she said, I usually don't say this, but since this is for your daughter, she signed it, Love, Ginger Rogers. Oh. That was very nice.
So basically you thought that musicals, the spectacle that they are, would be very captivating.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Jessie always liked music, always responded to music, and so I didn't think it was too big a stretch. The other thing that happened was living here in Los Angeles, there are a number of opportunities every year to see silent movies on a big screen.
Yeah, with a
theater.
And usually with an audience as well.
Auditorium, right, with live music accompaniment.
Yeah.
The Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra does wonderful fundraiser every June where they play for a great silent comedy film. So we started taking Jessie to these. And that's where she first got to see Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, Harold Lloyd, all the greats. And she saw them the best possible way, surrounded by a simpatico audience, surrounded by people of all ages.
The experience that you're supposed to have when you see that, like what the original film experience would have been like.
And that's why I don't judge people. When I have friends and they'll say to me, I just don't get this person, that person, the other from back then. I think that a huge part of that, and this is not news or revelatory, but a huge part of that is that if you're watching it on a small screen, if you're watching it on your laptop or at this point on your phone, it's just not going to affect you the way that seeing it in a theater with an audience and again with the live orchestra. And so, you know, sitting there and seeing Charlie Chaplin the way you're meant to see Charlie Chaplin is pretty amazing.
But also, and I'll put this out there as well, you're seeing Charlie Chaplin before you've seen all the Charlie Chaplin copycats.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's very important. I tried to teach it when I was after my freshman year in high school. I mean, in college, I went back to Vegas and I tried to teach a friend about Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm. It's very
and
hard.
And then it was very hard because she has seen Hitchcock copied over and over and over again. So you actually don't see how original this man was because you've seen it copied. And with Chaplin and with the people that you named, Keaton and Lloyd, like we've seen, especially in cartoons, especially like Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And we see these comedians, their styles copied over and over. So you were there at the early, like the inception of where you should have seen that.
Which is why actually though, from about third grade to sixth grade, I was constantly having fights. I gave up. Come seventh grade, I gave up because people would say, oh, I just saw the best movie ever. It's a Rob Schneider film. I just saw the best movie ever. It's an Adam Sandler film. Now here's the thing. I do like, there are movies that I like and I'm not a snob when it comes to this stuff. I think The Waterboy is a fantastic
look,
movie.
I think The Great Dictator and Deuce Bigelow are pretty much the same.
They're essentially, the same. I mean, they should be a box set.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, I used to get really upset because I'd say, how can you say that this is the most brilliant person in the world and yet you've never seen The Marx Brothers? Or you've never
how
seen-
old were you when you were having this fight?
Yeah, exactly. I was roughly from about 8 to about 12, and then I gave up.
Please tell me you sounded like one of the Bowery Boys.
How could you say, I'll hit you right in the, I'll suck you right in the kisser?
Essentially, that's what it was. Oh. It was just me
that's
in
great.
Shock. Also, I'm born on Stan Laurel's birthday. So Laurel and Hardy were also very, very important. And we got to know Lois Laurel.
Lois Laurel.
Stan, Stan
wow.
Laurel's daughter.
Oh, wow.
Who
and
loved that a kid, that a young person like myself knew who her father was and loved it. So whenever people ask me, you know, everybody knows a couple celebrities born on their birthday. Well, I would always say Stan Laurel, and everyone would stare at me and not know who that was.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, just FYI, also Tupac.
Stan Laurel, Tupac.
When you're hearing this episode, or this episode will air on the 17th of June. My birthday is the 16th. If you'd like to send gifts, you know, right on over here to Earwolf. Just anything you want, whatever you want. No pressure, but just, you know.
Mostly related to Tupac or Stan Laurel.
Exactly.
An unforgettable night in our lives was when you were either 9 or 10. There's an annual event here in Los Angeles that's sponsored by the Los Angeles Conservancy, our historical society, called The Last Remaining Seats.
Okay.
Where they take over the remaining movie palaces downtown, mostly on Broadway, and show classic films in these classic theaters. And they sell out. They sell out the minute they announce them because it's a hugely successful series, and I've been involved with them for many, many years. One night they did an evening of Laurel and Hardy at my favorite theater, the Los Angeles Theater. That was the last one built here in L.A., 1931. Its opening attraction was City Lights with Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, beautiful.
And they have a great photograph in the window case outside the theater of Chaplin on opening night with his guest Albert Einstein.
Oh, wow.
It's a fantastic
photo. Wait a minute.
Photo.
I've seen that photo.
Yeah.
That's a great photo.
Yeah.
I have seen that photo.
So they sold out the theater, 2,200 seats for an evening of Laurel and Hardy. They showed the two-reel comedy Bratz and the feature film Sons of the Desert.
Hmm.
Well, very few people, I dare say, of this or any recent generation have had the experience of sitting in a theater that big. You know, very few people see movies in theaters that size.
And beautiful as well.
Yeah.
Seeing the old-fashioned theaters where they put in so much time and effort and they're just stunning.
And to be
there's
and hear and experience the sound and the feeling of more than 2,000 people screaming with laughter, rocking with laughter. It was truly an unforgettable night.
Well, that's the kind of experience that makes a person be like, these things called movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This thing called film.
Well, so my dad said to me, going along the lines of the me constantly trying to explain to other people how wrong they were about what they thought was the best thing ever. This also went along with music, by the way, because everything I listened to was older. And so when you've heard the best, it's very hard to then listen to certain pop music. But
right.
And that's with anything. You know, if you're a connoisseur of anything, it's hard to then sort of
Well, you're taking
over.
In a bigger swath of material. It's
you
not
are.
Just the last 10 years I'm comparing. It's like the last 100 years
exactly.
of art.
Exactly.
How does this compare?
So when they did the they did a remake of Great Expectations.
Oh.
1998.
Yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
With Ethan Hawke.
And Gwyneth Paltrow.
And Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the cast.
And Jesse was intrigued with the film. And did you come down to see it? Or did you?
No, what it was that you said I couldn't see it unless I watched the old one first.
Something like that. And it was dinner time. And you said, well, can we watch it tonight?
Mm.
And I said, really? Now, I had something else I was going to do that night, but I wasn't going to pass up this opportunity. So I pulled out my laser disc of the David Lean film of Great Expectations from the 40s with Alec Guinness and John Mills and Gene Simmons and Martita Hunt. And we watched it. And Jesse, she found it a little tough to get into at first because
it's like— It's terrifying.
Like, not just that, but like all of the films of that period— They take their time establishing the exposition. Most films today are in your face right away.
Yeah.
Right. No wasted effort. Boom.
Yeah.
Right now. Here it is.
It's also black and white, though. It's black and white and very dark. It's meant to be visually very dark, not just in tone, but as I said, so you're watching this and it's just in every possible way, it's extreme. And even in the first few scenes, they're terrifying. They're actually terrifying. Mm. And so we watched it, and I can't say I enjoyed it because it is a difficult film to watch, but I respected it, which is what I found over time with a lot of what we watched together, a lot of older stuff. You know, you may not like it, but you can respect it. Which is true of today's films too. There are movies, you know, I can say I didn't enjoy it, but I respect what you did. So then I went the next week with my friend to see the movie in a theater, the new one. And as I sat there and was sort of just I can't say if the movie was good or bad because I don't honestly remember my response to it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what I remember was as soon as it ended, I went, all I know is this is terrible compared to the old one. This doesn't hold a candle to the old one. And I immediately said to my friend, you have to come over and watch the original with me.
Right.
Because this does no justice.
But this person also doesn't have your life history.
It's true. And so, yes, she did watch it. She was a good sport and she watched it and didn't get it. But it was an amazing experience for me.
It was a good try.
Because it was an amazing experience for me. Clearly my Elmer Fudd impression. Because it was the first time where we'd done that. Where my dad had said, okay, you're going to watch the old one and you'll see the new one. And so I really could go, okay, yeah, no, this has nothing on the original. And especially considering that the new one was in color, and so you had all of these other things that you could use.
Yeah, but also they're trying to infuse the priorities of the time into the story as well, right?
Yeah, it's quite different. And so, it's been an example that we both use a lot where I say, again, I don't judge people my age, our age.
Right. It's hard for us to understand something out of context.
Yeah, you can't.
Or just like, oh, I've only ever seen movies in color, so yeah. I'm going to watch this and be like, I don't even know who these people are.
And that's
I like Ethan Hawke.
You know, but that's, and growing up, when my parents would go out, because obviously most nights my parents were out because they were at screenings.
Mm.
So when I was growing up, what my dad would put on was either Betty Boop or some other great old cartoon. It would either be a series of old cartoons or sometimes Our Gang, Little Rascals. But often it was Captain Marvel. Who
the 1941 Republic serial, The Adventures of Captain Marvel.
I loved that. I loved
wow.
it.
Shazam.
I loved it. And I would watch that all the time. And then got into and then of course Buster Crabbe.
As Flash Gordon.
I got very into that and Ming the Merciless and all this sort of stuff. So again, what was happening was we were sort of inadvertently, I became a comic nerd without knowing that I did. So now my boyfriend, who is a comic book nerd, will say to me, oh, this is my favorite, that's my favorite. And I go, oh no, I do like Superman. I like George Reeve. He's a really good Superman.
Yeah, okay.
And I love Buster Crabbe, and Ming the Merciless is one of the best villains. No, not the 1980. The original Ming
the
Merciless.
Old one.
What? So yeah. So also Charlie Chan. I mean, there's a laundry list of the things that I saw. Charlie Chan was great as a kid.
You know what? We should take a little break here.
Oh.
Just because we've been going for a little while. We should take a break, take a breather. And spin it in Baron's direction. and start talking about what you guys have in common because you're very close in age and what you saw growing up that affected you.
Oh, jeez.
So we're going to do that. All right, gird your loins.
Girded.
Get ready.
So girded.
Okay. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. Folks, you know that we have great advertisers who support our show and keep it free for you. One of the reasons why advertisers love Maltenon Movies with Baron Vaughn is that they know the show has amazing listeners. Well, about once a year, we run a listener survey to help demonstrate this to advertisers. And right now, we have an all-new survey that I'd like you to take to help us learn more about our audience. Just go to podsurvey.com/Malton, M-A-L-T-I-N. The survey will take only 5 minutes of your time. We're going to ask you some questions about yourself and what you like to buy, but it's completely anonymous. Your answers help us find advertisers who are well-matched to you, your interests, and the show. When you're finished, you can enter a monthly drawing to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Even if you've taken one of these surveys before, I want to ask you to take this new one. It's been completely revised. And advertisers like it a lot when we have the most up-to-date answers to give them. And what's more, you have a chance to win that $100 gift card. Once again, that's podsurvey.com/Malton, M-A-L-T-I-N. Thanks a lot for helping us find the best advertisers so we can keep our show free.
Well, we're teasing a lot because we... Okay, welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. I'm Baron Vaughn.
I'm Leonard Malton.
And who are you?
I'm Jesse Malton.
Uh-oh, we got double Malton. It's a Malton shake right now.
It's a Malton shake.
Yes, father and daughter team. We're talking about movies that Leonard saw fit to share with Jesse as she was growing up and mold that Malton.
Mold That Malton, which you can buy, actually, in stores.
Hi, welcome back to Mold That Malton.
Mold That Malton.
Well, let's talk about molding that Baron.
Uh-oh. Well, mostly I was molted by lava. No, that's horrible. That's a horrible joke. No, what were you going to ask me?
No, I was going to ask you some of the films that left a deep impression on you when you were very young.
Now, you know, I was a bit of a latchkey kid, and, you know, Mom worked. I was about to sing Tobacco Road right there. But I essentially, cable was my babysitter in a lot of ways. And my grandmother was TiVo before TiVo. She bought cable for us. So that was a big thing that was a big deal that we weren't paying for cable, that my grandmother paid for it. And she had cable at her place. But then she put a VCR in two different bedrooms in our house.
What?
So that way she could tape her programs, and she would do it at her place. And whenever I was with my grandmother, she had this stack of VHS tapes that she was constantly watching. She would go through the TV guide at the beginning of the week and circle things that she wanted to watch at the red felt tip pen. And then she would program every VCR. She was the only old black woman that knew how to program a VCR.
I want to be best friends with her.
In the United States of America. Yeah, she was a awesome woman. But I was home watching this cable, afraid to go outside and get stabbed. So I would just stay in there and watch things all day. And a lot of the movies that when we were talking about this on the email, there were three movies specifically that Jesse and I have a fondness for. But there, I wanted to give note to a few movies. First of all, the first movie I saw that I saw too early was Amadeus, which I mentioned before.
I saw that really young too, though.
Now,
and it has stayed with me.
I was a musician. Ironically, I played the little violin when I was a kid. But I did not put together that Mozart was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just Mozart to me. It was that's a brand name. McDonald's.
Right.
Mozart. Pepsi. Mozart. So when I saw the movie Amadeus, I thought it was about a different person. And I wanted to rent it because I was watching Muppet Babies.
Amazing
and they
show.
Did a thing with Rolf where they called him Amadeus. And then they took that 70s Rock Me Amadeus hit and they turned it to Amadeus. And I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. I bet you this movie is the source material of that. So I rented it and this is why I love local video stores, which we no longer have, unfortunately. But the two men, a father and a son, who ran my local video store, were so taken that this young black kid was like, I want to rent this Amadeus movie, that they were like, oh, you want to rent this? well, I have a bunch of other suggestions for you that you should watch. And they kind of stewarded me, I guess, you know, put me on a path of watching all these different movies. And I'd wander to the Oscar-winning section. And we're like, oh, The Deer Hunter. Let's give that one not yet. And I was like, yeah, this one, Christopher Walken, not yet. Not yet for that one. But that one, definitely. Goodfellas. I'm like, okay, whatever. So Amadeus I saw really young, and it kind of taught me a lot. It taught me how to watch movies. It taught me what to look for, because it was such an intense story, and I really was riveted the entire time, because it was boring stuff before that. And then that day I was like, this is incredible, and it put me on this. But I still loved a lot of animation, and the animation and things that I looked for had that depth to me.
Yeah.
Of what Amadeus has. But there's always, like, there's some really interesting stories. So I always gravitated towards the darker things that were for kids, not like everybody else. So I gravitated towards things like The Labyrinth, which my mom loved. I did love The Muppets, as established by watching Muppet Babies.
Muppet Babies.
But was I ready for a musical about a goblin kidnapper?
From Jim Henson.
From Jim Henson with David Bowie. Singing David Bowie songs. I didn't think I was ready for it, and I was
ready for that. Came at you like a freight train.
And it was very dark, and I kind of gravitated towards that kind of stuff. I don't know, I turned into Mike Tyson right there. I gravitated towards that kind of stuff. But it's more like, that sounded a little bit more like Truman Capote. Anyway, guys, I gravitated towards things like that were darker, and these three movies that Jesse and I, one of them is called The Point. Have you seen? You've seen this.
Mm-mm.
You've never seen this?
No.
See it.
Okay.
It's on Amazon Prime right now, if anybody out there has Amazon Prime. So I didn't know. A lot of people know The Point as an album by the musician Harry Nilsson, who there's a documentary about that Leonard was talking about called Who's Harry Nilsson? That is frighteningly sad.
It's done by my friend John Scheinfeld. It's an awfully good film, but so sad.
So sad. That's also on Netflix, as far as I know. But this movie I saw when I was young, and I looked at the IMDb, and it looks like originally it was narrated by Ringo Starr. Then they did an American viewing in the 70s, and it was narrated by Dustin Hoffman.
That's how I first saw it, with Dustin Hoffman's voice on it.
And I think in the 80s, I must have heard it with Alan Thicke's voice, because Dr. Seaver was all the rage.
Right.
So if it's a movie about a boy named Oblio who has grown up in a land where everything has a point. Like, just, and I mean a physical point at the top of things, heads at the top of the buildings. It looks like people are going to be impaled on points, but it's a metaphor, obviously, about always having to have a point. So suddenly this baby is born with no point, and it's an affront to the kingdom. And then what ends up happening is he's cast out of the kingdom because he's illegal. And he's on this journey through the pointless forest to find out what his point is. And all the music's by Harry Nilsson. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's strange. The animation is watercolors, essentially. It's like a watercolor painting with this really artistic, strange. And it's very psychedelic at the same time. And that movie I saw when I was young, and I'm like, what is this? And it made me think about my place in the world, about when you don't fit in with others, or everyone's saying that there's something weird and different about you, and I don't like you for that pure reason, which is what this boy, Oblio, goes through. I wonder why that might be significant to a young black child.
Yeah, if you listen to my dad's episode, the episode my dad and I did while you were away, that's pretty much what we talked about was...
What was significant to a young black child?
As a young black child myself, I also being raised by film buffs, and my mom also loves musical theater. So,
yes.
Like I mentioned before, the only stuff I listened to was 40, 50 years old. And the only stuff I watched was 40, 50, 60 years old. And it made me different from the other kids.
Because
I had better taste than they did. Anyway.
And I developed taste. But there's two other movies, though, that we wanted to talk about.
Well, it's funny. So Baron and I, emailed me this list of that he loved from his childhood, things that he just could not forget. And it was so, I can't tell you how much it tickled me, because as I'm reading it, I was going, oh my God, and having the same reaction.
Because these were also the things that you were kind of more discovering on your own.
Yes. This
without the assistance of Father Maltin?
Yes. This was separate of Daddy-O on this one. So the ones that there were four that were big.
Uh-oh.
For me.
Yeah, what are those?
Fern Gully, which I didn't
know.
Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest.
Yeah.
Rockadoodle, which when you were at Rockadoodle, I'm pretty sure that's the moment I knew that you were destined to be a Maltin and become one of us. Was just because finding other people that know Rockadoodle and love Rockadoodle. Exactly.
Don Bluth
and Phil Harris. Anyway, yeah, Rockadoodle and Robin Hood, the animated one.
Yes.
What I find really interesting about this particular animated Robin Hood from 1973 is that my dad and many of his colleagues have zero emotions towards this film.
Mm.
They don't.
Just another Disney film.
They don't
these
necessarily
mofos.
Dislike it. Some dislike it, but they just it nothing. But almost everybody. So yeah, I'm about to be 29, and you're 31, right?
34.
34. Oh, yeah. Well.
Black don't crack.
Black don't crack, I was going to say. There you go. But, you know, this movie, if you talk to certain people of a certain age, everyone knows it and loves it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those. It's in your heart, and you can't help it.
Just like The Point, there's a lot of music.
Yeah.
In this movie and mostly mouth music as well. It's like mouth music with a guitar. It's very spared down. And if you haven't seen it, it's Robin Hood and Maid Marian are foxes.
Yep.
You know, just to get heavy on the metaphor, how clever they are.
Yep.
And it's
and Little John's a bear.
Little John's bear. Much like Baloo.
Played by Phil Harris. The best.
It's a lot of great voice actors from that era.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who
and
else.
Pat Buttram.
Yeah.
Peter Ustinov, George Lindsay, but Roger Miller is the one. And say when I mentioned this film to my dad, and I said, "Oh, it's Roger Miller." Again, he doesn't remember this film that well.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of singing wise, you know, what was the first thing I think of is Robin Hood and Little John a walking mm-hmm. through the forest, oodle lolly lolly,
you know, what a ding.
Exactly. And my dad went, "Oh, that's so funny because the hit."
Well, when you say Roger Miller to me, I think King of the Road. That was his signature hit. That was a huge success, made him a major, major pop star. And he had a great personality to go with it. And he was a big deal for a while.
Yeah.
And Disney hired him when he was hot to play the balladeer, Alan Adale.
Which I didn't know.
I didn't know that either.
Exactly. And so, but it's, and as I say, as soon as he told me that and explained, it made so much sense.
Mm.
Because I went, oh, yeah, well, that's it. I mean, he's a minstrel, and it's sort of folk music in that way, and as he's walking around. It made it that much better. It made me love it that much more.
Yeah, and it's a rooster with a heart of gold, speaking of which we did mention Rockadoodle.
Rockadoodle,
which I think
so
we should get into a little bit more.
Yeah.
Speaking of roosters, Rockadoodle is, well, first of all, it does have that, and I don't know, there was a genre, and I felt like it was happening a lot in the late 80s, early 90s, where you were starting to see more films, you know, with the Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We actually talked
mixed
about Cool
media.
World.
Yeah.
Where you're seeing live action go into animation and back and forth.
Yep.
And so with Rockadoodle, there's this, it starts live action, and then it becomes an animated film.
And this is another where my dad doesn't remember it. When I looked it up, though, and said, well, it's 1991, and I remember it.
It flew under the radar, I feel
it
like.
So well. Yeah, well, and it's
pun
almost
intended.
It's almost impossible. You are welcome. It's almost impossible to find it now. It's on YouTube. The whole thing's on YouTube. But it's really hard to find. Exactly.
It wasn't a hit. Was it a hit?
I don't think so.
It must have not made money. Nobody knows it but you and me.
But, right? but the thing
and
is,
other
so,
people
so
in the 28 so to 34 range listening.
Glenn Campbell.
Oh,
who's
right.
Chanticleer?
Yeah,
who is an Elvis rooster essentially?
He's basically the rooster as far as this farm is concerned.
Yeah,
this rooster makes the sun come up.
Yeah. And if
because
he doesn't
crow, he has this voice of gold, and he gets up every morning and he does this number, and the sun comes out, and he's got this. He's Elvis.
He's Elvis.
He's a rock star.
He is Elvis.
To the farm.
They look. If you were wondering what a rooster Elvis looked like, guess what?
Perfect rendition.
There's an answer. And then the Ellen Green is also in it. And again, going back to me loving musicals, the fact that she's using her Audrey voice.
Yeah, Ellen Green played Audrey in Little Shop of Horrors, if you didn't know.
Yes, and her voice is very distinct. And whenever you see it now, I mean, that's what it's that sort of, my goodness.
Yeah,
and
that's somewhere that's green.
So when she's talking, she goes, Chanticleer. And I said to my dad, I was listening to it. I went, God, that sound. They either got someone who sounds just like Ellen Green or they got Ellen Green. Look it up. It's Ellen Green.
Nice.
And there, too, Phil Harris is the narrator because Phil Harris is a boss.
He's got that perfect voice.
Yeah. And it's and Christopher Plummer is the Grand Duke.
Yeah.
And it's just Sandy Duncan is in it.
Great.
Charles Nelson Reilly. It's just like you just got this incredible cast of people. And then Don Bluth was the director, and he was sort of being bred to be.
Well, Don Bluth was the heir apparent at one time at Disney as the so-called nine old men, the veteran animators and animating directors. Were reaching retirement age and moving on, and some of them were passing.
Did they refer to them as the nine old men?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like Lord of the Rings.
That's
kind of
what they were known
the
as.
The seven witch kings and the nine old men.
Well, it was a spoof of how Roosevelt referred to his Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
That was that was a parody of that, referring to his animators as the nine old men even before they were old, but then they got old. And it looked like Don Bluth was going to be the heir apparent, the man who was going to pick up the baton at Disney.
Do you remember anybody else from that era that was kind of in line around Don Bluth?
No, he was –
It was just him.
He was the guy.
Oh, okay.
And then he led a palace coup and left Disney.
Yeah.
Wow.
He took a lot of talented people with him, and they started their own studio. And they made The Secret of Nim.
Yes.
And they made Rockadoodle.
Which is – Secret of Nim is also a very important movie.
You know, number of films. And had a very tumultuous career, he and they together, with some success and some not successful ventures.
Well, even with Secret of Nim and Rockadoodle, and I said that I gravitate towards the things that are a little darker, those movies are very dark.
Yes.
And I think in the environment in the country at that time, they were a little bit darker than what people wanted their children to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that they kind of took this left turn.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that movie. Fascinating.
A lot of people know Secret of Nim. I mean, that's one that you do hear a lot. Rockadoodle is, again, like you said, more just you and I have seen it.
Yeah, it's like Streetcar Named Desire or Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. I mean, everybody knows Streetcar. Am I right, guys? Anyway, you were saying.
Who is this man across from us?
It's me.
And then
Johnny Theaters.
It's that guy.
Johnny Theater references.
So Johnny Theater references. That's what I'm calling you from now on.
Okay.
So the non-animated movie that you and I agreed on, boy, did we agree on it, Coming to America.
Oh, say, now, can you see I'm coming to America.
This is one.
That's a song from the movie.
No, he just made that up. This movie is one of those where if you showed it to someone and they don't think it's funny, I don't know that we could stay friends.
Now I'm in the situation where the woman I am seeing,
mm-hmm.
She has not seen a lot of movies that I believe are classic comedies, and she had not seen Coming to America. She also hasn't seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Uncle Buck, but we'll fix that.
Right.
But she had not
seen... She's a fixer-upper. I get it.
It's okay. Coming to America is, I think, especially on watching it again and being able to show someone this movie for the first time ever, someone who is a big Eddie Murphy fan but somehow just never seen Coming to America. She hasn't seen Trading Places either, but she hasn't seen Coming to America. So I was like, this is essentially one of the greatest comedies of all time.
It absolutely
is. It what can I say? It's Eddie Murphy at his prime.
And the first time that he played more than one character.
First time he played more than one character, him and Arsenio Hall share that duty. But that barbershop
scene. He plays a white Jew.
Get out of here. Yes.
He plays an old man white Jew.
And a lot of people didn't know that was Eddie Murphy.
And it's just, if you want to hear my mother lose it, just start going, start doing his, basically do Eddie Murphy as an old white Jewish man in a barbershop.
Where's the spoon?
Aha.
Yeah, what do you know from funny?
That's the thing. Yes.
Oh. It's yeah, just, and it's but,
and it's it is like we're talking about too. It's one that I found on my own. I found separate, and it's funny because my dad and John Landis are friends, and I've known each other forever, and I never put it together. I'm a credit watcher because of my dad there too. I'm a credit watcher, and I do see, but. Just didn't put two and two together, and then finally went, oh my God, this man that I see made this movie that is possibly one of the best things that's ever happened.
Wow.
And yeah, and the people in it too, it's just, it's an incredible cast, and it's one of those casts where when you go back and watch it again, you go, oh my God, so-and-so's in this.
Yeah.
I'd only seen Eric LaSalle in ER.
Yeah, this
and
is
there
pre,
he was.
Pre-R.
Soul glow. Soul glow.
Yeah, it's got a lot of great... Who's Eric LaSalle? Cuba Gooding Jr. is in that.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
In that barbershop scene doesn't say one word.
Yep.
Samuel Jackson shows up.
Garcelle Beauvau. Who's,
oh, yes.
You know, she's in it. Louis Anderson works in the restaurant. James Earl Jones is the king of Zamunda.
Now, here's the thing. This is what this movie is about. If you don't know, it's about an African prince named Hakim, who on his 21st birthday is to be wed, an arranged marriage, because he is the prince of an African kingdom named Zamunda, the king of which is James Earl Jones, the queen of which is Madge Sinclair. They both also did the king and queen in Lion King. Let's get that out of the way. So, in the Lion King. So, they've arranged a marriage, but he is interested in a woman who is a person, not just a thing for him to play with, which nobody around him seems to understand except for his mother, kind of.
His mother says, I understand that maybe he needs to sow some oats.
Right, but she's it's also like she's saying that because she knows the king needs to hear this.
Yeah.
Who knows? So he comes to the United States, to Queens, in the 80s.
He spins a globe and puts his finger down onto the globe
States.
To stop it.
In New York City,
and
yeah.
He picks and he says, "Perfect, Queens," because he's going to try and find his queen.
Which I can only imagine in New York at the screening of this show, of this movie, the first time that when people said, "Where can we find a woman who is so amazing?" Queens, it must have gotten the biggest laugh. It's the only thing I could think of. You want to say things? I can see you wanting to say things.
No. I'm smiling and I'm remembering. That's all.
Okay. I'm just saying, if you were at a screening of this movie early on and you have a story, feel free to chime in.
No.
Okay.
I'm just listening and enjoying. Okay. And I'm remembering how red hot Eddie Murphy was at this moment. And how...
And Arsenio Hall.
Well, yes, but I'm remembering specifically how Eddie Murphy, who shot to stardom on Saturday Night Live...
But he hadn't... Also, he just didn't disappoint.
Oh, no.
He just kept going up. It was like, this guy can't miss.
And then... Almost accidentally got his screen break in 48 Hours.
Right.
With Nick Nolte, which was supposed to be an entirely different movie with an entirely different cast. And everything, you know, the stars aligned and that movie just hit the bullseye, made him an overnight sensation as a movie star. And then followed that with Trading Places.
Which was a giant
Another smash.
Hit.
And then this. I mean, this was just, you know.
It was like pow.
Yeah.
He knocked three out of the park.
On a streak.
I'm always amazed at films. So when my parents and I watch a movie together, and especially, obviously, I'm older now, but even as a kid, I always found it interesting because you had three different perspectives, three different, you know, I know what makes my mom laugh. I know what makes my dad laugh, and I know what makes me laugh.
And they're wildly different things.
And no, the thing is, there are just certain things that I know are going to get them, and other times I'll watch something just as random. But we watched the first Hangover movie together.
Oh,
we were together,
goodness.
And we were all laughing.
Huh.
And I remember that very distinctly because it was the first time in a while we'd seen a movie where we were all laughing. And so even when my parents come home from seeing a movie together, usually my dad sees movies with me or my mom. He tends to go with one of us. And sometimes my mom and I have to fight over what we don't want to see. It's like, no, you go. Damn it, I did the last one. You do this one. But something like this where my mom cracks up. And my dad cracks up, and I crack up. And it's from 1988. That's the other thing. You know, some movies don't age well. And you can love them to pieces, but be aware that they're not aging well. This movie, I mean...
It ages well because of the ideas in it.
Yeah.
are still relevant.
Yep.
And that's true for – that's what, in my personal opinion, makes a comedy a classic.
Oh, yeah.
When it's like, oh, this is going to actually stick around. And you look back at – we've already talked about a few movies. Specifically, I'm thinking of His Girl Friday, where the – it's about these characters and their relationship to each other. It's not about the time period.
Exactly.
It's about people are – comedy is happening and people are trying to get something from someone else to become something else.
Yeah.
And a movie like His Girl Friday and a movie like Coming to America will stand because you watch it and you go, this is still good. This is still funny because I still relate to this. Coming to America.
The best comedy is about – real life. The best comedy is about human nature and the foibles and the quirks of human nature and the way we interact with one another. And that doesn't date. That's why a Charlie Chaplin comedy from 1916 is just as funny today as it was the day it came out. Because it's not just that he's a great performer, which he is, and that he surrounded himself with talented people and all that, but because he's getting at something we still recognize and relate to. And I think that's true of any great comedy, any decade you want to name, and why some films, as you say, will be around forever.
Absolutely. And
another moment I remember, just to bring it back full circle, was when Jesse was about 9 years old, we had a chance to go to a silent movie festival in Pordenone, Italy.
Of course.
It's held every year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of it. No,
film archivists and scholars from around the globe.
That's awesome.
Cinema Muto.
Oh, of course.
Converge on this town that is not a tourist town. It's a very prosperous city, actually. Mm. I think a banking city.
Mm. And an Italian banking city?
Yeah. I was in fourth grade, and my parents actually took me out of school to go to this film festival because they thought this
it's educational.
Is so worth it. This is so worth it.
And we had a great time. It was a wonderful experience.
Awesome.
And on the last night of the festival, and we'd met people from all over the world. On the last night of the festival, we were at the Cinema Verdi.
Of course.
Which seated, I think, about 1,200 people.
Green movies?
Okay. For a lot of the films, they had different headsets you could wear to hear someone translating. So it was lots and lots and lots because there were people from all over the world. So you had these headsets for translating.
But on the last night, it was Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush. And there was no need for translation. And they had a live orchestra, I think, from Slovenia, just over the border, playing a score. And Jesse and Alice and I talked afterwards. And Jesse said, all these people from so many different countries, so many different languages and cultures, but we were all laughing at the same thing.
I was a very bright child. It was an incredible experience together and to sit there and have people – again, it's not just laughing, losing it. It goes beyond just the, you know, oh, this is funny. People were cackling and it made the experience – really, really spectacular, and one that has for the three of us, for we three Maltons, has stayed incredibly vibrant, and it's just a wonderful memory, because to be in a theater like that, you know, we do. I'm very lucky, obviously, with my dad. We've been to some incredible film festivals, and to some incredible theaters, old movie palaces, and things like that, and just even just seeing a film in that way. Seeing a film in a beautiful old theater or seeing a film, as we talked about, with an audience, it so affects everything else. But this experience, and because I was young, it has just stayed with me. And that's it, is that if something is funny, it is funny. And Charlie Chaplin, there's a reason why he was who he was and he was the star that he was, because he can make people from all over the world laugh at the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And so warm, something that, you know, I feel like a lot now with comedy, things are mean. Comedy can get very mean. Well, the comedy, which
petty.
It's interesting. A lot of women don't like the Three Stooges. I'm part of that group. Yes, I know. But if you, it tends to be, if you ask women, between, Marx Brothers and Three Stooges. They'll always go Marx Brothers. I say this as if people on a regular basis are having this discussion.
One out of one women.
Right. But when I do talk to fellow film buffs, it comes up a lot. And it's because the Stooges, they are hurting each other. And there's
not, a lot of slapping and
there's
hitting.
There's not a lot of love in those. But with the Marx Brothers, there's so much fun.
And a lot of love.
Fell in love with Harpo immediately. And
Harpo's a pantomime character.
Yep.
Yeah. Jesse was little. That's who she responded to right away.
Because there's no speaking.
No.
It's just those wild eyes.
He pantomime. And then suddenly play the harp like an angel. Because that's a thing you could do.
Well, you know what? Our time is running out.
Uh-oh.
Now, Daddy, I don't know if he's going to do this or not. I haven't told him. But there's a song that we sing that I learned very, very young and has become a song that I make my dad sing before he's going to be taping stuff, recording stuff, whether it's TV or whatever it is, to get his lips moving. You're an actor. You know that
the lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue.
Exactly.
You're saying it's like a warm-up
around
exercise.
Around the rough and rugged rock, the ragged rascal ran. Yes.
What a voice.
I know, right? So there's a song that if my dad is either getting tired or if he's starting to stumble over his words, I say, okay, we have to sing this. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Will you sing it with me?
I will. It's from a vintage cartoon series that was based on a character – a wonderful character who originated on the printed page in the Saturday Evening Post, then became a star in comic books, and eventually they made a series of animated cartoons starring Little Lulu.
Hmm.
And this is her theme song.
Everybody turn up your turn your radios up right
one time
now.
Only.
I know.
Little Lulu,
with freckles on your chin, always in and out of trouble, but mostly always in. Using daddy's necktie for the tail of your kite. Using mommy's lipstick for the letters you write. Oh, the clock says 7:30. It's really after 10. Looks like Lulu's been repairing it again. Though you're wild as any Zulu and you're just as hard to tame. Little Lulu, I love you, Lulu, just the same. The same. Little Lulu, I love you, Lulu, just the same.
The end.
Oh my goodness, I'm sorry that you guys could not have seen what happened when they did that second the same. Because it was like, uh-oh, there's a syncopation here. Oh, guys, that was
syncopated
fantastic.
Syncopated Maltons.
Syncopated Maltons, exactly.
I think we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
I think we'll leave it there.
I'm going to mention three more movies. No, I'm joking. We'll leave it there.
Happy Father's Day.
Yeah. Happy Father's Day, one and all. And, treat your kids to good movies. Steer them to good movies. Share good movies with them. When people say to me, you know, what movies should I show my kids? I say, well, think about older movies because then you can enjoy them too.
Right.
Instead of just using it as a babysitter, here, I'll park you in front of the TV set and you can watch this. Why not share a great movie that the whole family really can enjoy together and you can all get something out of? That's the benefit of those great musicals, those great comedies, all those wonderful films. That's my message for the day, for the week, for the month. And Baron, if people want to get hold of you between now and our next session here.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you can hit me up on Twitter, guys. It's BARVONBLAQ. You know the theme song. What about you, Mr. Malton?
Well, I'm at Leonard Malton and also online at leonardmalton.com. And if you're not watching Baron on Grace and Frankie, you're missing one of the...
Miley Cyrus is all about it.
One of the hot shows of the moment.
Thank goodness.
And thank goodness. It's been renewed for a second season, so congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you all here again next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Wait a minute. What about Jesse?
Me?
Yeah, where are you?
Oh, I go where he goes.
All right.
And there you have it. See you next time, folks.
Pop.
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 Pop. Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Pop.
Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape. or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.